So far and wide, keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay.
Ba, 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 ba.
I get allergic smelling hay.
Ba, 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 ba.
I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores!
The stores!
Fresh air!
You are my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
All right, Free Farm Friday. I really don't know what we're going to talk about. I think we're going to talk about the problem with cattle being sold at record low prices by men, cattle ranchers, so desperate to sell because they'd be terrified that if rain doesn't come soon, they've got nothing to feed their cattle. They can't fertilize their lands. Brian, how is it that so many of these cattle ranchers don't know that what comes out of the rear end of the cattle is fertilizer, brother?
I think they do know it, but they've been sold on the lie that you have to chemically farm and treat your pastures, that you can't let it work. And if you apply too many chemicals, it doesn't work as well.
Now, you say in this chat message group that you were in the other day, and I read the message to the audience on yesterday's show, you say that there are thousands upon thousands of ranchers that are bringing cattle to the sale barns much earlier than they would bring these cattle. I'm assuming that the prime of bringing a cattle to the slaughterhouse is what, 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years?
Usually it's about a year, because most of your beef is finished, either, you know, from in the plains and the feedlots.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically they're taken in and it's 8 months to a year. You know, they gain them weight on grass until they're, you know, they reach a certain weight. And then once they reach that certain weight, then they're pretty much taken from anywhere from starts, you know, Lubbock, Texas, all the way up into Nebraska, you know, throughout Kansas and stuff. And, you know, just the classic meat finishing areas. And then they'll go to the packing plant and then are processed. So they finish them on, you know, grain and you know, supplements and stuff like that. So typically, you know, they're trying to do that. And but right now, so with the drought, everything's being culled because there's no grass. You know, it's not raining, and you know, so they're grazed down to nothing. And one, you know, to feed them hay or sustain them is just too expensive because the cost of hay has gone up because fuel has gone up, and then fertilizer has gone up or non-existent. So, you know, you're talking, you know, $120, $150 a round bill now, which, you know, you could get it $50 to $70, you know, or, you know, for fertilized hay. So, you know, you've had, you know, almost a doubling of cost of the supplemental feed, which typically you wouldn't even pull that out until the winter time when you have a stretch where, you know, it's just hard to your transition from warm season to cool season grasses. And so, you know, if you've grazed everything down during that to up until that time, you put hay out until your cool season grasses start to come in. And typically in our area, that's February into March, and then, you know, because it starts to warm up, and then, you know, you have those cool seasons until about May, and then your warm season grasses start to come back. And so in our climate, you can get away with a lot of because of it because it's wetter. It's you know, so you have rain that makes up for things and stuff. Well, we're not getting that rain, so people are liquidating whole herds, not just the, you know, calves that were going to go to feeder, nor steers or, you know, heifers that they're going to send to the feeder. It's everything, you know, old cows, bulls, everything. I'm seeing there's now, several groups on. Go ahead.
Brian, you're in the chat room. Answer the question. Is this a buying opportunity for us then?
Yeah, if you have grass to put them on.
So now you've gone through the same drought in Wharton. Do you have grass?
I do.
So, and you have grass because you've been practicing regeneration.
I have, and I will say that we have caught a few rains, not as much as some people, but more than others. I mean, you can go 20 miles or, you know, 15 to 20 miles away from me, and there's cracks in the ground as, you know, as wide as, you know, a tire on a full-size pickup. And they're, you know, several feet down.
Wait a minute, you're not talking about the main streets of the city of New Orleans? We have cracks in the streets that big.
They're comparable, and they might even be comparable to the famous Florida sinkholes or wherever else. So, you know, it's just it's getting really desperate.
All right.
In a lot of places.
I want to share the latest chapter, One Straw Revolution, and Matsukawa's a book on this, because I just finished reading it. In it, he says he has been farming these rice fields for 3 decades, Brian. He says, and then he says in the chapter on fertilizers, and he says that people from the University of Tokyo still come and look at his fields and suggest to him what kind of fertilizer that he's going to plant. He even tells, and he doesn't do it, and I'm going to tell you why. He says that there are lands on the hillsides where nearby he had 1/8 of an acre of citrus trees, 1/8 of an acre. And he said he stopped the practice of pruning them. He planted cover all around the trees, and he did nothing else. He didn't plant any saplings. He didn't do anything else. And 3 decades later, he now has, Brian, this is the 1970s when he wrote the book. He now has 14 acres of citrus trees. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything. He didn't plant a single sapling, not one.
Oh, well, they just kind of let nature take over.
And that's what he said. He found out what is the natural cover crop for citrus trees, and he planted it around the trees. And that's all he did. And he let the branches fall where they may. And when the trees would expand a little bit, if the cover crop didn't catch up, he would plant a little bit more cover crop. And Brian, that's all he did. He went from a 1/8 acre small grove of citrus trees to 14 acres in 2 decades.
Yeah, and it's just a natural progression. You know, he understood that what he had going and everything would work for that type of you know, that type of plant community.
Right.
And he studied it and just kind of let it happen. You know, there's a, you know, when we're talking about citrus, there's a disease that affects citrus in Florida and deep South Texas and other places called citrus greening. And it's a disease that basically gives a green tint to the fruit, and it's spread by insects, and I think it's a fungus that affects the tree. Well, for a year, you know, it's been showing up. There's, if you drive from between my county, Wharton County and Fort Bend County, there's a sign that says, you know, importing citrus. Further south, then you see those signs because there's quarantines all over to try to stop the spread of this thing. Well, what do we know about bugs? and plant diversity. You know, if you bring in predator bugs that eat the other ones and take them out. So there's a story about a guy in Florida who was about to, you know, mow down his whole orchard because of the citrus greening. And he's like, he started getting the soil ready for other things before he took it out, and he started planting his cover crops. Well, it turns out he also had a big alligator that came in and they killed it and they buried it. And he noticed where they buried that alligator, the cover crops grew better and stuff. So he started understanding, you know, soil fertility and stuff a lot more, you know, more holistically. And then with the cover crops, he started seeing his citrus trees improving. The citrus greening was going away because he used his cover crops that brought in insects that killed the insect that spread the citrus greening. So he was able to recover his orchard instead of bulldozing it down. And just through improving the soil health and the plant diversity to take out the pest. So,
and in one strong revolution, Katsuakawa says the same thing, that he stopped fighting the insects. And he even says, don't kill the natural predators. And he doesn't advocate killing the natural predators in the rice fields. You know something else that he does? And folks, y'all get this book, One Straw Revolution. It's such a relaxing little read. I mean, the guy is so laid back. You just imagine he's like a Japanese hippie, right? But he says that he also doesn't introduce water into his rice paddies. So they're not rice paddies. He goes, the rice doesn't need it. And he says what he does is he plants the rice amongst the dead from the season cover crop. He lets it sprout up, and once it's like 4 inches tall or whatever, then he replants the cover crop, and he says it's clover. He replants the clover, and he goes, irrigation problem solved. That's just incredible to me.
Yeah, he's essentially effectively fixed his water cycle, and that's what you're doing when you're improving your soil health. You're fixing the water cycle and the nutrient cycle, and that's what people don't understand is we got these broken cycles. That's why we have these crazy floods. You know, I'm not saying our rainfall patterns haven't changed and things, because we've talked about that through land use. But I think we've always had in the South periods of, you know, you just have periods of heavy rain. And yes, eventually that land will flood when it reaches a point. But if you have a well-cared-for functioning water cycle, the flooding won't be as severe. And, you know, the more we cover the ground with concrete and other things, you know, we see an increase in severity of floods. Well, when you have a broken water cycle, your soil, yeah, after a half inch of rain, seals up and becomes pretty much, you know, impervious like that concrete.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's what we're seeing.
And he also says that he does introduce water into his rice fields, but it's almost always at the end of the growing season. And he says it's not really for the rice that he's growing. It is mainly to ensure that his cover crop is vibrant when they harvest the rice. And then, Brian, and then this is the other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about here on Free Farm Friday with Brian Koch, one of our master farmers. Brian, one of the other things he does, he says when they whack the rice down, because rice is like wheat, it's a stalk, right? He says they take it to the threshing, they thresh the grain pods out of it, and then you know what they do with the straw that's left, don't you?
Yeah, you leave it in place and let it go back into the soil.
You put it right back from where you just used the scythe to cut it from. And then he says the only fertilizer that he ever uses is he keeps a very large flock of chickens. and he he spreads once per season. When he lays the straw down, he lays some chicken manure on top of it, or he says green manure on top of it, and that's it. And he says his soil is still growing after 30 years, still growing in health.
Yeah, yeah, and it'll continue. I mean, it's a cycle. It's a nutrient and water cycle. It's working, and it just builds the soil and builds it up more and more.
And one other thing I want to, I don't know how long it's been since you read the book, but people are wondering, yeah, but what about the seeds, TKD, the birds take them out. They figured out, Council Alcoa figured out how to do the seeds. Maggie, you know how your dad likes to roll the corn seeds and that pink stuff so the birds won't eat it? Well, they figured out, figured out in Japan, they figured out that if they extricated a little bit of red clay from the hillsides, and they put it into these bins, they added a little water, and they got a little slurry mixture, that they took the rice seeds, and they did a large pan, you know, a two foot diameter pan at a time. They add a little clay, they add the seeds, and they just knead it with their hands. And then as they're kneading it with their hands, the water from the clay drains through the mesh into the, and it just caught below. And then what they have are seeds that are coated in clay. And he says that they can do 1/8 of an acre of seeds in an hour. And I'm going like, dude, that's a lot. But then they just let the seeds dry, and they have a natural coating of clay on them, and they sprout up tremendously. I mean, there was a natural solution to everything, it seems. And One Straw Revolution, that's why it's such a cool little book to read.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, that's one of the books that's out. There's quite a few other ones as well. And, you know, that's probably the best one. But yeah, I mean, you learn these things and figure out that you don't need as much as you're always been told you need to do things and grow things.
One more thing I wanted to comment on this. He also doesn't even till. I mean, he doesn't make any slots for the seeds, Brian. You know, he didn't even run a scissor through there. So did Z. He said, I just throw them out there on top of the manure and the straw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says they germinate naturally, and boom, you get the most healthy rice you'll ever see.
Yeah, in grains like rice, you can do that a lot more. But you get in some of this bigger stuff, you almost have to get them in the ground because you do need that seed-to-soil contact. But, you know, rice, rye, wheat. Because I remember, you know, when I was working on rice farms and stuff years ago, you know, when it was too wet in the spring to plant, they fly it on with a crop duster. And, you know, the ground was ready to take that rice. And if you could keep the birds off of it, you plant at a higher rate because you're not going to have full success. You're going to have, loss and stuff from the, from just either birds or blowing off or something like that. But yeah, I mean, rice and, wheat and, smaller seeds like that will germinate if you broadcast them.
Now we're talking with Brian Koch here on a Free Farm Friday, and we're talking about just a little bit about the book The One Straw Revolution from Masanobu Fukawa. It's a very relaxing way to read about agriculture. I'm just going to say that. Can you apply it to everything here in the U.S.? Well, no, because we're not all growing rice. some of us are trying to grow citrus trees, though. And, at the Walsing and West Homestead, where, again, I invite all of you to participate. This is your project as much as it is mine. And we're all going to reap the benefit of Walsing and West, we pray, someday. Go to Walsingham West. Just spell it out, walsinghamwest.com. Or just go to my site, mikechurch.com, and you'll see it there. one of the things that he does, though, is he does have citrus trees. And, you know, we often think in terms of citrus trees, well, you know, the Henry Ford example, I grow a bunch of rubber trees, and he grows them all in a row and all that. Well, Kachokoa or Fukuoka says, no, I did not guide or direct my citrus trees. I let them grow where the seeds sprouted. Now, this is instructional to me, and this is going to differ from where the kind of agriculture that you're going to see, like in Florida, and where they grow tangerines and grapefruit in Florida. Oranges, you're going to see them all in beautiful, perfect rows. This is to, even in up north in Maine, in the apple orchards and in Michigan, you're going to see everything in perfect, beautiful rows. And this is because, Fukuoka says that's not nature's way. If you do that, you're introducing a unnatural element to it, and it's going to affect the way the bugs live on the trees, the way the insects, the way the animals graze around the trees, all this. You got to take all this stuff into consideration, because we think that we can master nature, but God left nature to us in pretty good shape if we just cooperated. I believe that's the principal takeaway I get from the book, Brian.
Yeah, and you know it's when I gave my talk at the Congress and I talked about the principles and I talked about context. You know, what is your context? You know, where are you? Why? You know, what are you doing? Last week, we were talking about things. I was talking about the grazers in Chihuahua, Mexico, and their context is 8 inches. Their average 8 inches of rain a year. Desert, climate and all the hardships that go with that. You know, they're grazing in a sea of grass and adapted their whole system to where they are.
Right.
And, they're mesquite trees. If you drive we were driving through New Mexico a few weeks ago, and I was telling my wife, these mesquite trees have invaded this prairie here. And I said, those weren't here, years ago. And it's due to management and things like that. You know, they grazed at a way that encourages more brush growth instead of grass growth. Well, if they would switch that grazing regime back, that grass would grow in a way and that soil would function in a way that wouldn't be conducive to that mesquite tree, and that would kill that mesquite tree. And people are like, what about shade? What about this? What about that? Well, if you're, again, fix that functioning water and nutrient cycle, what does water do? Water cools things down.
That's right.
So that you're going to have a naturally cooler environment and microclimate closer to that grass, which is going to keep those animals cooler where they might not necessarily need shade.
So... yeah, some incredible stuff going on here. Brian, I want to bring Dan Mundy in. Mitter Mundy, our other master farmer, is joining us. Mitter Mundy, how are you?
It's been a bad day, Mitter Chair. You know, all you darn people who insist on paying people to mow your lawn and running air conditioners and getting new cars every 6 months are destroying our planet, and you are giving me holy hell running my factory.
I'm sorry about that.
the prolonged heat we have finally gotten here is beginning to affect our system, so they're just keeping us running a little rapid, trying to keep things running.
There's a link that you sent us, something that's going on at the Rodale Institute. It is called the Summer Lecture Series, Soil Carbon and Regenerative Agriculture, and the guy, the lecturer, and I will try to get him on, says, why is soil carbon so important to humans? Dr. Yikao Roy will illustrate the processes how carbon is accumulated in the soil. You know, Brian Kay talks about carbon all the time in the soil. You talk about it. Have you watched the lecture series from Dr. Rui before?
Yeah. I watched some of them, and last year when we went to the open house, matter of fact, I think next week they're having, I'm not going again because they tend, every couple of years you go when they get something new, but he was there discussing it. And next week he's having an on-site only hour and a half lecture, and I'm going to go to it. It's only about 20 minutes from where I'm working, and then get home from there. But I think it's worthwhile going to listen, because what's about what Rodale? Now, I don't know how many people have gone to the site, and I had this, it out, and I have it on that save out. You know, we're all trying to do our little homesteads, but ultimately, you're still going to have somebody, even if it's on a local scale, growing in quantity more than we're going to do, at least.
That's right. We agree. We agree on that.
Yeah, and he has, as I said, he's been there, I think, 7-8 years, but they've got a 40-year history showing the conventional, the no-till method, and what they're doing, now, doing it totally regenerative on a larger scale. So it's not quite the way Brian does it or I do it, but it's certainly not the way that Monsanto does it. And he's got a whole grab there. He did the trial plots, and it took about 2 to 3 years. There was a drop in production on those lands. And within 5 years, they were parity. After that, they started to exceed conventional. So, I mean, they got the data. They're showing it can be done. And he's very understand. He doesn't talk down to you. I'm impressed with him. So anybody that can see close enough and wants to go to the Rodale Institute, I really, really encourage you. Because, I mean, it just give you a little better perspective of, you know, it's one thing for us to talk about the tomatoes we're growing in the backyard. It's another thing to try to some of the local farmers that you may engage at the markets and all. We're trying to get them on board. I resource. I really can't speak highly enough of them.
Well, you know, one of the things that he focuses on, Brian, is the critical role of microorganisms in soil carbon transformation and stabilization. This is on the website here. You talk about carbon. We talk about carbon all the time. You know, in the Star Trek TV series, carbon-based life form. It's a carbon-based life form. Carbon is one of the essential elements you have to have, and you got to know the role that carbon plays. And so when he's talking about on a much larger scale of how to sequester, basically, carbon, this is something I've heard Brian Koch talk about before, sequestering carbon. And we're not talking about how John McCain and these wackos said that it should be done with coal-fired generating plants.
And it all gets so tiresome because I get to hear this all week at the meetings I go to how these supposedly very smart scientists don't understand that carbon is essential for plant growth. And
I mean, that's a giant duh, isn't it? Duh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just confirms, you know, people say, well, this is a hoax or this is that and everything like that. Well, yeah, and it confirms that. And you have to, I guess, explain it. You know, you always heard it, explain it to me like I'm five. This is what you have to do with these people. And then they finally get it. And it's nice to see them. But not all of them, but a lot of people wake up to the fact that, like, hey, maybe we're not doing things the right way. You know, I heard I was at a Dale Wednesday, and the talk was on reviving native grassland. And the first thing they do is go in and spray everything to death.
And you're going, no!
and I'm like, the problem is that stuff works. You can get that stuff replanted and everything, but at what cost? Not only to your pocketbook, but at what cost to, you know, the land you're managing? And then if you restore it and you just keep managing it the way you've always managed it, what good is that? You know, if you don't change your grazing regime, if you don't, you have to make a holistic change. It can't just be like, I'm going to replant it and it's going to be good for 5 or 6 years, if that. But the weeds are going to start coming back. The brush is going to start to re-encroach if you don't, do what you think. And then you have other people who, they just want it for the prairie aspect. They don't even want to put animals on it. I was like, well, you're just killing your opportunity to bring in more plant diversity by doing that. So it just doesn't make any sense. You know, they're supposed to be these supposed to be, you know, promoting this great land stewardship and everything else. Well, they're doing everything they can to destroy it and conventionally fix it when you can't really do that.
Now, what about the effort here? We're going to close our conversation here. And by the way, Dan Mundy, now that I see the website here, Dr. Yui's or Dr. Yo's, how do you say, is it Wee?
Dr.
Wee says, this is an in-person event. A virtual option is not available.
On that one, yes. There are some virtual ones and taped ones, but this particular one he's given next week is, be there.
Be there. Now, I was going to wanted to talk a little bit about the effort. There's an effort in the UK to get farmers to quit. Did you see this?
No.
They want to, was it, Maggie, £100,000 to quit? Stop farming. We'll pay you £100,000. And these farmers are struggling. They're in debt. A lot of them are going like, okay, mate, I'm all in. I'll move. Yeah, I'll leave the farm. You want it? You can have it. Give me my £100,000 and I'm out. This is obviously a government-led, but private industry, big ag, horrid industry-backed effort to kill off what is now obviously now a threat to them, which is a back to the land, small homestead, small farm movement in the UK. You know, Fiorella says she didn't know if there was one. Well, the fact that they're trying to get those farmers to quit tells me that there is. What's the TV show with the guy with the couple that moved out onto the farm?
The Good Life.
The Good Life. Yeah, we should all watch The Good Life and take some cues.
They stay in the suburbs. Well, you remember I did shit in my talk in the conference. I gave a specific example of a UK group that was not only were they doing started their own thing and were going around bicycles delivering to houses. On a bigger plot of land, and the community donated £100,000 to them to go out and buy 16 acres as a whole. Again, look in my presentation, the website's there. Middletown Growers.
Middletown Growers.
I was very impressed with, what these are. Just four people, women and men, and they're saying, hey, we're growing, they almost look like hippies the way they're, but they're out there doing it, and they're out there making home deliveries to people in their villages around that area.
And so, imagine that.
Home gave £3,000 to a farm. So.
Now, let's tie this together with what I talked about yesterday. Did you hear my little, I only mentioned it for maybe 15 minutes, I talked about Ruston, Louisiana.
Yes, I heard it.
Okay. I know that I got excited about it, and I even said, it's not everything that we want, but hey, look, that's the idea that me and Dan and Brian and Mr. Ernest and Aaron and the Kopkis, this is what we were talking, and Keith Jones and others, this is what we've been kind of talking about. Finding small towns and where someone already has an anchor, they already live there, and going like, whoa, is this a good place for what for the homesteading we're talking about? Well, if it is, move there. I mean, they're paying people to do it, but the model is that it's the human resource of people that know the land, were born there or near it, and may have a tendency to actually love it, trying to get them to move back. The agriculture's got to be right behind it, Dan.
Well, I do believe there was a discussion around the first Congress. Mitter Simpson brought it up, where wasn't he involved in the potential of starting a Catholic university? There was a site available, and I remember talking to him, and it wasn't to start a university, it was to create a town around it. So.
It's in Mississippi, yes.
The resources already exist.
Yes.
Not go out into the frontier and trying to start from scratch, but, there's another way, too, is we build our own town around what we do, but if we can, or both, nothing's mutually exclusive here, but, just like you were talking about, some people don't want the animals, they don't want to do it that way. Well, at the risk of sounding communistic, there is nothing wrong with you got a piece of property and I got a piece of property and we're rotating around. And I'm doing the animals and you're doing and you're doing the horticulture. So it can be done. It's just got to get this group together.
Yes, it has. Brian, tell us about this local effort from Brahmin Country Beef LLC. It's in the chat room, crusadechannel.com/chat.
Yeah, this is actually someone I went to high school with, and Freddy's is a just a local little restaurant. They have lunch specials and things like that. Well, looks like they're sourcing their ground beef out of the county. And so, you know, it's just it's people recognizing, hey, we can help each other out. Let's do it. And I think, you know, it's you can bypass all the big people if you actually start scratching around and looking local for things. You know, another thing I need to do is develop a farm that can grow lettuce and greens all year round. So Freddy's can put lettuce on that hamburger that's locally grown, and or pickles or whatever else. So this is how you start it, though, and this is what people need to do. They just need to find some people, and you know the Brahmin Country Beef people. They have financial backing and stuff. They are, you know, pretty set, so they can go out and explore these things, but. You know, they are doing it, and they're making an effort to provide a local product, you know, within the community, which, you know, I commend them for it. You know, it's not exactly how I would, you know, raise my beef or anything like that, but it's still that local product where I know more where it comes from than what I would go to if I see it at the grocery store. So again, you know, it's just an example of, what we can do is, you know, by, you know, creating these markets for local people to pick up. And if you really care about your community, you're going to do that. And you're going to try to provide something on that level.
Right. And if you have things that are left over, you can sell them at the local farmers market. You can barter them for people that don't have them. And I think that the key resource here is community. The land is already there. If we learn how to properly treat the land as God intended, let nature do what nature does, and then in community and solidarity with each other, do all the other things. We don't need these people, and we need to stop worrying about what all the mean, nasty, libtard lefties, as the World Economic Forum, on charge of stakeholders that are going to live in the cities, and on nothing but will be happy. And that's where I want to wrap up here today on Free Farm Friday. Sorry you came in late, Mitter Monday, but we got some good good discussion in here.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry I did too, but, you know, I have to you know, go with your responsibilities. Even though I'm still working for the man, Mitter. I don't have to take that seriously as long as they're giving me that check every couple of weeks.
The Crusade Channel is glad you're still working for the man.
Don't worry. You're still doing your short wave. I think Maggie told me I'm the only one that still contributes monthly for the short wave. So there's a plug for Monday. Yeah, I said I'd do it, and I kept on doing it.
Yeah, people don't even know we broadcast on short wave because they're so hung up on what the Ben Father and the rest of them are doing. All right, Dan, we got to go, but God bless you, brother, and thanks for chiming in. We'll be here next week.
Okay, Mike, Brian, God bless. See you next week.
Take care, Winter Monday.
All right, Brian, thank you. And again, we're going to wrap up here and get the Barrett brief here on in time. Brian, people can reach Brian. The easiest way, if you're looking for Brian or Dan Monday, is dagnabbit, go to upontheserocks.co and click in the directory. Register your own farms, your own homestead, your personal homestead in the directory. And people that you do business with, don't ask them, just put them in the directory. The larger the directory gets, the more people, when they come and look at it, go like, hey, look at all the people that are networking here in this directory at upontheserocks.co. It is the New Christendom Trades and Vocation Directory. It's free, don't cost nothing. We're not trying to scam anyone to get your email address and spam you. Hope you'll go check it out today. Brian, God bless you. We'll talk soon, brother.
You too, Mike. And we'll be in touch.
All right. As always, and we thank our farmers.